feel like there's some good stuff happening here. Welcome to the HB5 podcast, where we talk about co-working, productivity, and building your future lifestyle. This is episode 9 for January 25th, 2016. And this is Schropp here in the studio, back this week. We have a slim cast today. Just have Tecto in the studio with me.
Hey, hey.
And but we nonetheless have an awesome topic. Hate that Dieter and Jay could not make it today, but hopefully we'll pick them up next week as we continue on. Kind of a two-part series maybe at this point.
So. Yeah.
But we're going to talk about having a flat company culture.
Or firing all the managers.
Yeah, firing the managers, making the managers regular employees.
Something like that.
A lot of managers are not going to like be, they're going to feel demoted, so you might have to fire them.
yeah. I think it's disorienting when you are middle management to think that maybe you don't contribute anything, but that's not the point either. I think the real point with flat organizations is about empowerment, and so much of management or corporate structure is a throwback to the Industrial Revolution and the perspective that you got to stay on top of those people or they won't do anything. And
yeah, I think that's really what we're talking about. You can have a healthy hierarchical type structure. I mean, it's possible to do that.
There are always going to be differences, and you know, a company grows larger and larger. There's inevitably some stratification because you know, you're going to have people who play more of a leadership role and people who sometimes don't even want to get anywhere near the responsibilities of leadership. But that doesn't mean that you have to institute lots of layers. Maybe put it that way.
Yeah, I think the lots of layers, but also just the, you know, this is prevalent in a lot of corporate culture, but just the, I'm the boss, don't question me, I'm the boss.
Right, and the millennial generation seems to have a real problem with that kind of corporate culture as well. So it's
which is driving them to freelance and other things.
Or start their own businesses.
Yeah, exactly. So I would think when people talk about the Dilbert pointy-haired boss or Office Space, the movie, those types of setups. It really is that corporate thing that most people do not like being an employee in that situation. I'm not saying everybody doesn't. There's people that are probably fine.
Well, I think it's not just a question of whether people like it or not. There's also the dynamic of kind of how you were raised and schooled and educated, maybe. Schooling and education being slightly different things, but how you were prepared for your work life. And in a lot of ways, our school system and an awful lot of parenting points you towards being a good employee where you take orders, you do what you're told. And
Don't ask questions.
And you kind of you wait for things to be defined for you. And I think that's one of the big differences with a flatter organization is that especially for people who maybe are itching to define some things and make an impact themselves and see things that need to be addressed. A flatter organization gives people like that an opportunity to make a bigger difference. And it also then means that the organization benefits because you have people who are empowered and going after it. You're going to have a whole lot more impact and positive results are possible when people are motivated that way as opposed to waiting for orders.
Yes, I can concur with that. It's really nice to be in an environment where you can feel valued no matter where you're at, and actually your input is listened to. I think that's one of the common things you hear in a corporate world is that even when somebody outside of what you just said, where maybe you know there are people that just they're so used to taking the orders and they're just going to do it and they're beat down and that's the way they are until someone shows them there's another way, and it still takes time to get out of that. You've been in scenarios, Tecto, where you've had to kind of take people that have been beaten down and kind of get them into a, hey, you can be empowered and you can contribute mode. And so I think that the, you know, people that are already ready to contribute and want to be listened to, that's just the thing you hear about. People are so frustrated. The boss doesn't listen. The boss's boss doesn't listen.
There's so many things that come into any situation around, let's say, you know, an issue in a work environment or issue with the customer, whatever the case might be. You know, you've got dynamics where there are people who really don't have a whole lot to contribute, and sometimes they need candid feedback that, you know, okay, let's hear your idea out, let's really listen to it, but then as a group, you know, not just from a manager, but, you know, as a team, let the team kind of reflect back to a person why their idea doesn't have legs, why it wouldn't work, why, you know, let them see that they're not getting buy-in, and realize it's going to take more to earn credibility, because a lot of this is about earning credibility in a team environment. And if people are squelched from the beginning of not even being able to give input, they may not understand why their ideas really, you know, need more refinement or need more depth, or they need a bigger understanding before they pitch ideas and so on. But for people to grow into having that, they need that kind of feedback. And they need the opportunity to mess up. And a lot of that is about you know, not concentrating all of the decision-making power and authority, so to speak, in one person's hands, and trusting that they have all the valid perspectives. Because the flip side of that coin is, in so many cases, a manager gets disconnected from the realities of the day-to-day work, and it is impossible for them to have all the perspectives and all the understandings and be able to put themselves in everybody's shoes well and really ultimately make decisions for everybody that are effective. And so, you know, sharing that decision-making power is ineffective if you have a team of 200. So there's definitely a dynamic that kind of comes in pretty quickly when you talk about flat organizations that leads to smaller teams being focused on things and finding an effective, you know, team limit, how large you make a team. But then, in essence, empowering teams to go off, make decisions, and not concentrating those in one person's hands. And that's kind of a best practice. If you're making all the decisions, you are making yourself a bottleneck, and you are ultimately going to do your organization a disservice because you're not giving people a growth path. You're not yourself ever possibly making all the best decisions, and you are inevitably going to kind of calcify your organization around your own blind spots. And
you're making people depend on you too,
right? Well, even if they don't realize it. Can't take a vacation and yeah. You know, all those other dynamics that come in.
Yeah, they're gonna be. I'm lost without the boss. You know, I can't function. The organization can't continue. Whereas a flat organization, everybody is a boss in a sense of something. And one thing I think that's really interesting is how different these flat organizations are. We're gonna have a bunch of links. And I mean a bunch. There's way more out there to read on this whole topic, but we've selected some links that cover a number of organizations we think have interesting, I won't say they're the way you should do it, but they have interesting paths they've taken on this whole flat company culture setup. And one of the things that's really, really cool is how all these companies have differences, how they've changed, how they've evaluated what's worked, what hasn't worked. But in the end, they are giving everybody a voice and a chance to kind of almost make the job their own. The person comes in and whatever, I know we try to do this at HP5. We really want people to have a chance to, what is the thing you have the most passion about? What is it that you care about the most? And, you know, you might as well give up. And I mean, I've tried this myself. You know, I can't make someone else have a passion that I do for things. And sometimes they come along for a while, and it may be just because maybe I'm guilting them into it, and then I realize, well, that's not helpful, and that's a negative. And when you really talk to them, you find out, hey, they really don't have a passion for it, and you just kind of let them go out and find their own passion and move on from there. Is that something that sounds familiar?
Yeah, well, there's the dynamic of, you know, besides the cult of personality, peer pressure kind of dynamic where your own excitement for something that you're trying to accomplish can sometimes almost can put pressure on somebody else to get involved. And I think that shows up a lot more with people who are accustomed to a corporate environment where they're used to being told what to do. And when they feel, you know, they feel that pressure, their typical response is to kind of try to please their boss kind of dynamic. And they want to go along, they want to say yes, and their heart's not really in it, but hey, you know, shop's real excited or Tecto's real excited about this, so I guess I should be. And that doesn't last. You know, when you realize that that's why somebody has gotten involved in something or committed to something, it's best to let them off the hook and let them kind of figure out that that's not what we're looking for. But then the flip side is that there's the dynamic where people truly do have a passion for something. They want to accomplish something with you and do something together. And you have an opportunity then to function more in more of a duocracy where those who show up make the decisions, and you know, every time that you get together, you move the ball down the field. You don't show up and contribute for a period of time and come back, and things will have changed because people have been showing up and making decisions and carrying on. And there's a certain amount of almost whiplash effect that people go through sometimes, where you know, if they're somewhat on the fence about being involved in something you're doing, and they come in, they get involved for a little while, they kind of drop out, you know, whether it's something comes up in their life or they're not so sure they want to be involved. And then they come back and realize, wow, this is really moving because I didn't show up for a month or two and things are completely different. And that I've seen that invigorate people where they realize I do want to be part of this. But again, so much of that is the difference between people doing things for their own reasons out of an internal motivation and a passion that connects to some value of their own, versus people doing things simply because they're supposed to, because their boss is putting pressure on them to do it, or they're looking for some kind of peer approval or whatever the case might be on that front.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, passion is probably a much overused word in the startup world and in the small business world, but it is a word that I think works. And what I want to see, so if we have a scenario where somebody just, you realize that, it, you know, whatever you've got them involved in, that it's really not their passion. It's not what they're wanting to do. You talk to them about it and they kind of fade away from that. What I want out of that person though, is not that they just fade away and they go away and you don't see them again. I want to see them say, but you know what, this is the thing that I really have a passion for. This is what I'm interested in. And the job of everybody else in a flat org is to empower that person and let them succeed and give them tools to succeed. Maybe they don't see how to get to there. They know it's the passion, but they don't know how to get there. So they have a responsibility also. Their responsibility is to speak up and be honest and say, this is really what I'm interested in doing. And we've had that happen too, where people have said, this is really, after all the hindsight here on this stuff we've been doing, now this is really what I realized. And maybe it just took the process to get there. You know, sometimes you go through this to figure it out.
Well, and again, so much of this, I think, runs counter to our, and again, I don't want to call it our educational system, our school system. Our schooling is oriented around normalizing people to do what they're told and to not think for themselves in so many ways. And so there's a very real dynamic that people almost don't own themselves. They're not comfortable in their own skins, and a corporate environment doesn't really help you work through that. And so we've seen people come into HB5 through meetups, through just, you know, getting to know somebody, whatever the case might be, and, you know, kind of go in and out for a while trying to figure this out. And some of it has to do also with things like, okay, you know, I'm interested in five different things, and you know, one of them is something that's an HB5 project, and you know, I really want to contribute to that. But I've got four other things that I'm interested in too. And you know, we all go through this, but there's that reality of realizing I'm not going to be able to move the ball effectively on five different things at the same time. And so you know, we've got a lot of experience with people getting excited about being part of something we're doing, and then realizing that, you know, they've only left about maybe 4 hours or 8 hours a week that they can even think about it, to say nothing of maybe even showing up and contributing. And that's part of growing into more of a self-directed, you know, taking ownership of your own path, your own career path type of dynamic. Because again, if you work a corporate job, you show up for 5 years and you've got the max vacation potentially that you can get at your current employer, and you're, you know, you've gotten raises and you're comfortable. You know, you can hang it up when you go home. You know, 5 o'clock hits, maybe 6 o'clock some days, maybe you're 45 to 50 hours a week. But, you know, nonetheless, to a large extent, you can go home and Netflix and chill. You can just turn the brain off and hang it up. And, you know, truly saying, no, I want to accomplish something with my life. I want to do some things that go beyond just, you know, keeping some large corporation moving forward, keeping the motor running. It's a different kind of mindset, and it's not an easy transition for an awful lot of people, which all, you know, that comes all the way back to the flat organization. So a flat organization thrives really around having a team of people who want to take ownership of things, who aren't looking for just another job that they can hang up and go home. And I'm not saying that, you know, it should turn into people that are working 80 to 100 hours or something like that a week either. I mean, there are times where you're starting a company that, you know, there's a deadline, there's something you're trying to accomplish in the short term that you might pour on a lot of hours. But I'm really more referring to that vision for taking ownership of things and wanting to kind of put your name on them and see them done well. And not because somebody else told you to, but because you yourself have a vision for them. And that's where a flat organization thrives. I mean, again, a company grows, a flat organization grows, and it's 50 people and it's 500 people. And there's no doubt that there are going to be some levels of hierarchy, but there's so many things that a flat organization does to, in essence, have just enough hierarchy to not differentiate between those that are in leadership. You know, that's everything from potentially not having offices to not having reserved parking spots to any number of things that keep those barriers from being erected.
Well, there's a difference between leadership and management.
Absolutely.
And I know, again, everyone's seen these articles and it sounds so obvious, but when you experience true leadership versus just a manager doing their thing, it is a completely different feel because,
well, it's inspiring.
It is inspiring, but the leader is, you know, they wind up saying, hey, I'm going to really, my goal is to give you everything you need to do your job, give you all the tools, empower you to do it. And I'm going to get the heck out of the way.
Right.
And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to, my goal is not to give you a hard time and to make sure that you're doing whatever me as a manager thinks is the right thing for the company. Because again,
well, let's
that's
say,
putting it all in that person's
let's
head.
Let's put it back into that situation where a manager goes, well, you know, so-and-so is not going to do the right thing for the company. Well, why not? In so many cases, it's because, and this really ties into our next episode, it's because the manager knows something that employee yep. does not. And so the manager's going, well, you know, I would make a better decision because I have the big picture. Well, why doesn't that employee have the big picture?
Why does everybody all the way up and down have the big picture?
Right.
And in a flight organization, everybody side to side has
that's the goal.
That vision.
Yeah. Yes.
And it should be a vision. Like, so here's the interesting thing, and these are some of the challenges. Even in a small organization like HB5, one of the things we already see now is you see some struggle where somebody realizes they didn't know something was going on. And at some point you have to just step back and say, you know what? I can't be involved in everything.
Right.
And there's going to be things that I don't know, but it's not because someone's holding it back.
It's not a secret.
It's not a secret.
No.
It's because you know what it's also a two-way street. You also have to trust
right.
your coworkers and say, you know what? That group that's you mentioned small working group. That small
right.
working group that's working on, let's say, a logo identity thing
sure.
for the company. Even though you might be excited about logo identity, you've got this other passion, this other thing that's more
right.
important to the group that needs to work on.
You can't do it all.
You can't do it all. And you at some point you have to say, I'm gonna trust that these guys are gonna come up with something that's really
right.
great.
And there's no question that if you have a care or an interest that you can give some input, but then ultimately unless you're going to be part of that working group, so to speak, and show up and be part of that duocracy, they're going to have to make a decision, and it's going to be a good decision.
Yep.
It may not be exactly what you would decide, but you decided to get involved in other things. And the truth is that it's going to be good enough. And in most cases, if there's room for improvement, then that room for improvement will become obvious over time, and you can revise the logo.
And it can happen. You know, that's the other thing, too, is everyone thinks, or not everyone, but a lot of us get in a mindset that decision's final. It can never be changed. It's going to wreck things. And what you really find out is that most decisions
are not life or death.
They're not life or death. You can change them later. You can tweak them.
You
might find out you're wrong and that they did
right.
nail it. But I really am a big believer in letting small working groups break out and do their thing. And when they do come and present, so we have...
Well, and empowering them with as much of the big picture beforehand as you can
yeah.
so that there's no there's no gap in their knowledge.
There's no surprise.
That leads to them making a decision that's, you know, short-sighted or missing some perspective.
Nothing is more frustrating than have a working group say, we've got the solution, we've got the idea, we've got the a plan, we've got a product, we've got whatever they're working on, to come to the bigger group and be excited about it, and then have everybody kind of poo-poo it because of kind of silliness. Now, with that said, there can be reasons where someone could give input and all that. I think that's where you just have to be super gentle and be willing to truly be a leader when you are being presented to, because you, there's no, I guess my attitude is pretty much, I'll sit quietly, and I know no one's going to believe this that knows me, but I'd rather sit quietly, listen, and then pretty much accept whatever it is and really not give a lot of input at that point, because I know the group's put a lot of work into it. And anything I say or add to the conversation, is it really helping, or is it just me wanting to hear myself talk, or is it what value is that really adding to the thing? And again, I could be wrong because I've missed out on all these things that have been talked about during the working group. So unless it's like, to me, unless it became like a life safety issue or something where you're like, guys, you know, have you thought about this? I mean, if someone could slip and fall. You've got this great plan. Let's do a slip and slide inside the co-work facility, but they might actually get hurt. Probably not a good idea. But let's face it, most of the ideas that come back are nothing like that. And let folks be excited about what they've produced and let them succeed.
And catch on to their excitement. Understand where they're coming from, how they arrived at their conclusion as best you can,
yep.
And support it. Because the truth is that in many cases, if something's 80% of perfect, it's good enough. And if you move forward, that other 20% will become clear. It'll get tweaked. It'll get better. And it can do that in most cases without you making a big deal out of it right at the beginning of the, you know, decision-making process. So there's, I think, one other huge piece to all of this is the flatness of respecting your team members as being equally valid humans as much as you, that they have perspectives, that they have experiences, that they have talents, that they have all the things that you have. They're different, but they bring something to the table.
You better hope they're different.
Yes. So. Well, if you had a homogenous team that was all clones of you, you'd be replicating all of your blind spots as well as all your strengths. And so, you know, giving people that credit, if you will, that benefit of the doubt, that trust is, you know, a big part of that is letting go of control. And I think that's where a lot of the resistance to flat organizations comes up, because
if I don't do it, then it's not going to get done right.
I don't make the final decision, then, you know, I don't trust these people to make the right decision. And that's the reality. And employees feel that. They feel like employees. They don't feel like team
members.
Even
in a flat organization, they can feel it if you're giving off that vibe.
Right.
And so this brings up an interesting point, is the recruitment aspect in an organization. It's almost more painstaking, I think, to hire or add to a team in a flat situation, because you really it's and I know, again, cultural fit, you hear this, it's overused, but it is true. You need to not only have that cultural fit that, hey, they have a passion, they like what we're doing, it makes sense. You also have to have this thing where they're actually in a place in life where they're ready to jump into a flat organization where they've made the transition. And it's not that.
Well, it's from both angles. You know, you've got people who come into it having been, you know, a beat down corporate employee in somewhat of a soul crushing environment, who struggle to find their place because nobody's telling them what to do, and instead they are being given opportunities to contribute, to define their role, and to kind of bite off a chunk of what needs to be done and take ownership of it and make it happen. And they struggle to find their footing because it is just overwhelming. Nobody's telling them what to do and they're lost. And that transition is incredibly hard. And
then we've seen it.
Absolutely. And then you've got people on the other end of the spectrum who've been in management on some level or the other. They've maybe gotten a little addicted to being in charge, and now they're in an environment where, in so many ways, it's about winning trust, winning credibility, persuading others to a viewpoint, making your case, and ultimately seeing everybody as your equal. And having to work in that kind of environment can be frustrating because it feels like everything moves like molasses. I'm stuck. I can't just make a decision and get it done. You know, And it can often be frustrating to somebody who wants to be in charge, to kind of have to switch gears and realize this is different. It's not bad. It's just different. And then ultimately there's at some point, hopefully, the realization that it's not that it's slower. It's just different. And that when you earn the credibility and you build the relationships and you build the trust, that decisions can actually start to happen very quickly, and that others will bring viewpoints that you didn't consider that will affect your own if you'll hear them out, and you'll end up with a better result than if you had just operated in standard manager mode and, you know, made the decisions.
Like you have all the answers in your head.
Right.
Because your boss is saying and expecting that you have all the answers in your head. That's what happens in the corporate world is on up the chain, the pressure's on that manager. You need to have all the answers. How did you not know? How did you not see right. what was going on? You know, and a good manager, they're not going to know everything. They can't see everything. They don't know.
Well, it's not humanly possible.
It's not. And but that pressure is put on people in corporate America all the time, corporate world, because this is not just an American thing. But it is an interesting and it is an interesting component. And another thought along this is the same. It's kind of funny. The same issues that people have converting into this flat architecture are really the parts that are hard are the parts that are also great about it. You know, once they've made the transition and feel comfortable with it, then those things, just like you're talking about, Tecto, just start to. The success just starts to be a realization that, wow, I had input from three or four other people on a working team, and now look at this. This was way better than if I tried to do it myself. And I didn't have to work as hard.
Well, and I've already got buy-in from the whole team. And we come back to a larger working group that, you know, maybe kind of sent us off in a direction to get something done. And I've already got support because there was understanding of how we were going to attack it and a lot of expectation that, you know, when we brought back our result that the default was going to be to support whatever the working group came up with. And again, it is so different. It's really uncomfortable to transition to for an awful lot of people. And I think ultimately so much of this comes down to whether you want to be part of something like that or not. A lot of times people don't. It's really uncomfortable. There are companies who start heading down this path and they have people leave because it's you know, it's not psychologically a fit for them.
And that happened with Zappos, I think.
Yes.
It's such a big change that folks just said, this isn't for me, and they left. I think that's part of the process sometimes, although you did mention that Zappos, it was an extreme jump for them. So.
Well, Zappos was already, they're almost a experimental culture. They seem to try new things with abandon compared to an awful lot of companies. And so they were somewhat flat in a lot of ways before they headed down what's called a holacracy, which is really a formal system for flattening your organization. And it's fairly involved. It's probably not a fit for some smaller companies, but, you know, even larger companies, it's a fairly big transition. But, you know, the piece there at Zappos that has and has had, and a lot of other companies down this path have had, is that regardless of the fact that, you know, you've got a CEO or a founder or whatever the case might be, who's got a significant number of shares and obviously some authority to, you know, decide we're not flat tomorrow. The flatness is a choice of that leadership, and it is a lifestyle and philosophical approach to validating everybody that they work with that enables an organization to, in essence, be as flat as possible.
Well, you brought up a good point there. I think the leaders definitely set the tone for how the organization should be flat or that whole world. But what's really cool is in a healthy situation, in my opinion, in a healthy scenario, you set the initial tone, but everyone involved will help shape and tweak exactly how that winds
right,
up being
right, as they take ownership,
time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is, I think, the win of the whole thing is that that's the ultimate. They get to shape the culture
right.
from no matter what they do in the company or organization, they have a chance to really make an impact.
Yep.
So I think that wraps up what we had to say today. Unless you had
any
thoughts,
we could
this for a while,
peel the onion another layer and get into all kinds of implementation details, but those might be things, yes, for another episode. And that's things like how do you handle compensation in a flat organization?
Yep.
That one topic alone can get fairly involved because it's so different.
Well, maybe we can get into that next week with transparency, because that certainly has impact on transparency. So look for us with next week's episode on kind of a part two to this flat organization, and we'll be talking about transparency and how important it is to a flat organization.
See you then.